I firmly believe that we deserve, period.
I just feel like it's important to keep saying that out loud, that this is us learning in public.
The foundation of how to not have trash politics is really just relationships, right?
So if you're not aware of how powerful you are, then how can you be using your power to bring others up?
We're giving you collective liberation. We're giving you personal healing. We're giving you millennial auntie with a mic.
You're listening to Scene, the podcast.
So today, welcome. We are resuming or in the middle of a conversation about work and life. And sometimes I wish that we could just hit record and talk about all the things because there's so much that I think, I don't know, that I hold back or that I find that I'm like protective of. But remember how we had that conversation about keeping things sacred, keeping things in the pocket, talking to your people. So I'm glad that we're here together. Today we're going to be talking about a massive topic, and I know we're going to revisit it. We've talked about it before in the past, and I'm going to read a little bit of an excerpt from Bell Hooks, Black Looks, Race and Representation, and this is from chapter 7 of that book, from The Oppositional Gaze, and she writes, "The gaze has always been political in my life. Imagine the terror felt by the child who has come to understand through repeated punishments that one's gaze can be dangerous. The child who has learned so well to look the other way when necessary. Yet, when punished, the child is told by parents, 'Look at me when I talk to you.' Only the child is afraid to look but fascinated by the gaze. There is power in looking." There's something about this excerpt, that there's power in looking, that made me light up and think about our question for this week. And the question for this week's episode is, what does decolonization look like, mean to you, to both of us? So much of my time feels like it is consumed in dreaming of, thinking of, ushering in, working on both myself and how I can be of service to community, how I can be of service to people that I care about, communities I care about, people that I don't even know. And decolonizing and decolonization is something that feels not only inevitable, but required work as we are uninvited settlers on what is unceded Squamish, well, Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh territories. And also decolonizing seems and feels really important as a child of migrants who came from a place that was once colonized. And so I think about decolonizing, I think about decolonization, I think about what does that look like? What does that mean for me? And I will never say that I know all the answers. I think that's the first thing that I want to start off with. And I think that is decolonial in and of itself, that I don't sit here as a person that has read all the books or has heard all of the stories and all of the experiences, but I really want us to have like a generative conversation about what this means, what this looks like, how we practice it, how we embody it, what it isn't even. As like a process of elimination, because sometimes people will be like, this is decolonial. And you're like, is it though? let's explore. Let's discuss. So yeah, I'm wondering how you're feeling about this conversation. I'm wondering if you have any reflections about that excerpt from Bell Hooks and that oppositional gaze and that there's power in looking.
It's such a powerful quote. I mean, I feel like it could be applied to so many different things, so many aspects of our lives and our work. So as always, very incisive from Bell Hooks. In terms of the topic more broadly, I'm so glad we're having this conversation. I always am. I always feel like I learn a lot talking to you about this kind of thing. And I definitely feel always hungry for more conversations like this with you and also just in my life in general, because it is so needed being a settler. And yeah, I also am very ready to kind of be in the contradictions of all of this, because I think it is our responsibility that doesn't feel like a strong enough or emotional enough word, but as settlers, it is our responsibility to be having these conversations, but more importantly, to be doing this work. And at the same time, you know, thinking about this question, what does decolonizing mean to me and what does it look like for me? I sort of feel like I, in some ways, can't answer that, because I don't really get to say if what I'm doing is decolonial. And there's such a huge likelihood that as a settler, what I think is decolonial is not at all, and is still very much colonial. So it's like, I feel like I can't answer that question, but I also have to answer that question. So looking forward to just being in the contradictions and the confusion and the not knowing.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I don't even know if this makes sense. And I'm, again, so open to being wrong here. Like, if you hear something that I'm saying and you were like, girl, it's not it, please tell me. I really do want to know. Like, I really do want to know. I think about what decolonizing and what decolonization means for me. I think I have to start from myself. I have to start from a place of, who am I in this place? And then where do I come from? So I think about decolonization in, like, maybe not two streams, but like two branches of the same, you know, tree. And I think about, we've talked about this a bunch, right? Like, that I feel like the sense of responsibility because of who I am and who I come from and where I come from, and that responsibility requires something of me here. So when you just said that sometimes you feel like, who am I as Lala to determine what's decolonial or not? I almost want to challenge you about that, because I think that, like, you as a descendant of Malayali Indian people, there is decolonizing work for you to do as a brown woman in your brown womanhood. And that is connected to, it has to be connected to, because you're here on this land. Like, we're here on this land as uninvited guests. That decolonizing work feels like it has to be connected to the decolonial work that's happening here and led by Indigenous nations and folks, like, on these lands. Does that make sense? How does that feel when I say that?
Totally makes sense. It totally makes sense. And I do share that, and I definitely feel like, as I was thinking about this question, I kept remembering when my dad told me that he was raised, you know, in these British-run boarding schools, you know, just after a few years after independence, and was very much raised to believe that white people were superior, to the point that he didn't even begin to question that until he was in grad school. And it's so hard to wrap my mind around. It's also not, given my own experience. But so I feel to the core of my being that, you know, colonization that violated my ancestral line, and that healing work that I have to do, and how important and relevant that is to the place I'm in now. And I think I feel maybe a duality in a couple of different ways. One of them being, that's where I come from, but where I am now, I'm a settler and I'm part of
a colonial project.
Yes, that perpetrates those same kinds of violations on other groups of people. And it's sometimes easier to identify with the way that, you know, we're harmed than the way that we contribute to harm.
Right.
And also being mixed, I have the white side of my family as well. So I think there's those two sides of it. And that doesn't mean, I mean, white people need to decolonize just as much, if not more, than everybody else. And I keep thinking about Lee Miracle, and in her book, My Conversations with Canadians, I think it was, when she talks about the knower's chair and how settlers and white settlers in particular are so used to being in the knower's chair, and they're the ones with the answers, and they're the ones who get to be the judge of everything.
Yeah.
And I'm so conscious of trying to take myself out of that. Yeah. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And that kind of, like, if you were to ask me, what does decolonization mean to you, Nick, or what does that practice meant, or what does it look like? I would have to start with listening. Like listening to understand, not listening to acquire knowledge, because those things are different. I was sitting in a advisory group that I'm part of, and some conversations were happening in which an Indigenous person was talking about something that was hurt, like just deeply hurtful to them. And within the dynamic of who was in the room, this person also felt as though they were being silenced in their expression of their hurt and their anger and their frustration. And it just really struck me in that moment, as I was like, you know, this is like a Zoom room, right? Like I'm virtually participating in this space, that like my responsibility in both in that space, but more broadly as a settler here, as an uninvited guest here, because I have to always, as much as I walk through the world as a Black woman, I am not a descendant of enslaved people. I was not stolen from a place and brought here, right? So there is that distinction as a Black person that is a child of immigrants. And we can talk about being displaced because of things like colonialism and what colonialism does to our home countries and why we end up migrating, right? Like that's a separate conversation. But I know that my Blackness doesn't get me off of the hook of being a responsible and being like party to both, like you said, perpetuating harm, and maybe even I can also experience harm too. Like that duality exists. And so, yeah, in that Zoom room, as a Indigenous person was talking and speaking from their heart and from frustration and from like pain and anger, I was like, my responsibility here is to listen. So when you just said the knower's chair and like trying to kind of almost, I think of like dethroning ourselves from that knower's chair and being not just students, because students is about like being a student is about, in my mind, especially having gone through like the kind of like academic process of like post-secondary, you're acquiring knowledge for a purpose, right? As opposed to like listening to understand where somebody's coming from. And so a lot of what I see for myself in terms of like my decolonial work is really listening to understand. And in many ways that has meant having to openly or privately, but in any ways, check my own fragility about what is being said is affecting me, and almost sitting in that, like sitting in what it means to hear those words, sitting in what it means to witness that, like those emotions, and taking that away. And that's my work to do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I really appreciated that, what you just said about the knower's chair, because in my mind, colonialism has really centered like this sort of scientific, white, patriarchal, imperial, win at all costs mentality, practices, systems, values, all of those things. And listening to understand feels so counter to that colonial approach and those colonial practices.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause yeah, the problem, so much of the problem as it's been taught and explained to me by Indigenous folks and Black folks in particular, it's the problem with the relationships, right? It's not necessarily the problem that we're all here together. It's the problem of what are the power dynamics? Who's defining the terms of what that means, you know, and how are we all here and how do we relate to each other and how do we treat each other and all of those things? Who has the power to decide all of that? And so, yeah, when you're talking about like shifting how you listen and, you know, shifting the feelings that you center and in what space and what do you bring to this space and what do you take to a different space and all of that, that all feels so aligned with that kind of understanding of getting into right relationship with each other.
Wow. I appreciate that a lot about the problem being the relationship and how disconnected I think a lot of us, I myself have felt from who I am, where I come from, who I am here, what my responsibilities are here to people who are of these lands. And I think that's like the settler colonial project, like working perfectly, that we feel that disconnection. And for myself, it's like really a challenge to remain in that connection and to remember those things and hold those things, like holding those connections, because that means that no matter where I go or what I experience, I'm also thinking about others. And it's like a decentering ourselves and all the things that like that sort of we've talked about, like rugged individualism and like going it alone and really just looking out for you and yours. And in some ways as well, decolonizing is like really expanding who I see as my responsibility. Not just, you know, people in my nuclear family or my friends necessarily, but like the places that I happen to occupy and live on and move through and the people who belong to those places. That we are each other's business, that we are like responsible for each other, that we are, in an ideal world, we would be in like better relationship with one another. And I think I've craved that connection. And I think that like there's so much loss that I can map out for myself when it comes to feeling disconnected from places that I come from. And so there's a part of me that's like, if I could only go back to my home, you know, territories and be on my own land, then I would feel. And it's like, yeah, and here you are, right? You're on these lands and you're still an uninvited guest, but these lands feel like home to you for some reason. So how do you show up and be in relationship to like here as opposed to longing for home there?
Mm-hmm. That just made me think about, so there's this show, Queen Sugar, which was created by Ava DuVernay, and it's like the it's the most incredibly high quality show that gets completely overlooked because racism, but yes. Anyways, one of the things I feel the most when I watch this show, which centers around a Black family in rural Louisiana, it's this sense of community that I've never experienced, where there is this extended family and the community around them, where folks are each other's business, where when there's a conflict between the two of you, you know, we're pulling in these other people around to help. And when, you know, this person over here is isolated and unwell, you know, the people over here are coming and like taking care and, you know, getting involved. Mm-hmm. It's something that I so deeply long for, and I feel so at a loss as to how to create that. You know, it's not how I was raised, and I feel like I've worked hard to build relationship skills that I also wasn't raised with, to have the skills one-on-one to check in and, you know, have immediacy and talk about the relationship and look after the health of the relationship and, you know, have generosity with each other and show up for each other and all of that. But when it comes to creating that in bigger groups, when it comes to creating that with people that are around me in a place, you know, who maybe I don't even particularly care for, you know, what happens if you're in an apartment building and you're having a problem with your neighbor, right? It's like, do we know how to work through that, or do we call the cops or call, you know, the manager or whatever? There's so many places in our life where it's so obvious that we've lost and had these skills taken from us. And it's so scary and hard to try to figure out how would I even go about rebuilding that.
Yeah. So for you, would decolonizing mean relationships, like investing in those community relationships with even the folks that are not in your like immediate circle? Or how would you define that for yourself?
I think that would be part of it. I think, yeah, another big part of decolonizing again is taking myself out of that position of knowing and following the leadership of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations whose land I'm on. I mean, I think I've just started to work through some of the workshops offered by Tatalia Nahaney from Decolonize First of the Squamish Nation. And, you know, it's like every aspect of our lives can be decolonized, right? The way we think about literally
everything,
every facet of our identities and our work and our health and our everything. But yeah, maybe in terms of she talks about like taking it in like in pieces, since it is, there is such a breadth of it. It's like you have to kind of take it in a little bit more manageable pieces so you can really focus and go deep on specific things. And so I think for me right now, maybe my main focus would be relationships and my work.
Yeah.
Because the therapy profession is so colonized, colonial. And with Healing in Color, we're trying to do something different. So maybe that would be the focus for me right now in terms of what specifically am I trying to decolonize.
Yeah. I feel like another aspect of my decolonizing work is both listening to and taking, like, heeding to the leadership of Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh leaders and matriarchs and folks who are actively surviving, thriving, living on their lands and on these territories that we happen to be on. And then I always kind of, it's like the, you know, we talk about the collective and then we talk about the personal and like how we kind of groove and move between both of those things. And so some of the listening that I think is deeply important when it comes to decolonizing work is listening to our bodies and listening to our feelings and listening to our needs and taking those things as wisdom. I felt like so extremely disconnected from the wisdom of my body and my spirit for honestly my whole life. Like so many times that I can look back at and recall extreme amounts of like dissonance and like things like landing in ways that now with more tools in my tool belt and more like awareness and language, I'm able to say like, oh, this is like not in alignment with my values or my favorite self or what's right for me or what feels like morally right or just for both myself and for others. And I think that the impact of colonialism has oftentimes privileged this idea, kind of what you were saying before, not only of like the expert or the like the person who knows all the things, but like how we come to know what we come to know has been so like, I don't know, like we don't privilege, you know, storytelling. We don't privilege, we call it things like folklore. We talk about things that our elders say or do. And I'm talking about myself. So I have read stories and heard my grandma speak on things and have been like, oh, that's just some old people stuff. And like the wisdom of people that are no longer on this plane, and the wisdom that I hold in my own body, and the wisdom that exists in like natural spaces and in other people. It's like, I don't know. It's taken me this long to recognize that like I have deeply disconnected from that wisdom. And I'm like, why is that? Like, why have I been chasing sort of the like kind of academic pursuit of like wanting to be the expert and wanting to have like empirical knowledge and like distrusting myself and chalking up the wisdom that others might, you know, share with me as like, oh, that's just like your kind of personal little mm-hmm. thing that you say, as opposed to like, wow, like we all carry wisdom in our bodies, and when we get the opportunity to hear from each other even a snippet of that wisdom, what a gift is that, mm-hmm. you know? So yeah, the listening part is in many different directions.
Yeah, I really love that, and I completely agree. The ways of knowing have been colonized, and how feeling and intuition are some of our most powerful senses, and yet have been totally devalued. And there's so much healing and decolonizing that can happen by reconnecting with that. And I also want to complicate this, because I'm thinking back to at our event a couple years ago, we refer back to this from time to time on the podcast, when Allison talked about learning to distrust her own instincts yeah. as a white person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think about that often, and I apply that as well to, you know, existing as a settler, that often my instincts about something are just not the right ones because I've been socialized into this, you know, colonial project. And so I guess I wonder, you know, what's the intersection of those things, you know, like how can we both learn to listen and trust ourselves and the wisdom that comes to us through our intuition and through our bodies, which I think is also through our ancestors and in the DNA that we have. And also recognize that often something that we deeply feel, and it might feel intuitive and just so right to us, might actually be deeply colonial.
Yeah, wow, that's a really great question. Thank you for the like added complexity. The first thing that comes to mind is like, you said yourself that part of our decolonizing work is like relationship and connection, right? And so I wonder how primed a lot of us are to keep some of our feelings or our deepest thoughts or the things that seem so right only to ourselves. And then I wonder about what it would look like to bring those to our community, or bring those to sort of the collective, and not like, you know, post the question on Instagram or whatever, but like really bring those questions and make them, I don't know, taking a, there's something about like the ways that we're taught to really go it alone and think our thoughts and feel our feelings in isolation. Mm-hmm. And so we may have community members around us or people in our lives that are both reflective of our own experiences. So they might not actually be the people that can tell us, like, that's deeply colonial, or that, like, your first instinct is maybe go second instinct. Like, think about that a little bit harder, you know? But I think that also goes back to what you said about, like, relationships and having, like, that the relationships that many of us have don't reflect the quote-unquote diversity that we, you know, sometimes believe we have in our communities and our friend groups and things like that. You know what I'm trying to say?
Totally. And I love what you're saying. I completely agree. And I was having kind of a similar or related conversation with a dear friend of mine just last week where, you know, we were talking about the pain and fear and devastation, heartbreak around making a mistake and hurting somebody that you're in community with or that you want to be in community with, and how at the same time as that is deeply painful and we don't want to do that, that is the reality of being in community and being in relationship with folks, is that we are going to make mistakes and we are going to hurt other people, and they're going to tell us about it, sometimes in ways that are very painful for us to hear. And it's really about how can we show up to that and how can we repair that. And the only way to avoid that experience is to isolate and withdraw. Yeah. And you're still negatively impacting people, but you'll never have to hear about it. Yeah. And it's like, well, is that what we would rather experience? Would we rather just be in isolation and just not know, or not have to, you know, look at somebody or listen to somebody's words and really have to, like, take in the impact of our actions on that really human level? I mean, it's a lot easier in some ways.
Yeah.
Right? It kind of reminds me of last week when our BIPOC of the week was talking about short term, it's easier to just live in the shame.
Yes.
Yeah. It's, like, easier short term to just avoid it.
Than to look at it.
Yeah.
Than to look at it and to show up and keep coming back. And thanks for that, because, like, we are bound to. We cause harm every fucking day. Like, mm-hmm. every day we make mistakes. And I think that, like, where I see myself and so many of us, because I can talk, I think I can't speak for other people, but I can be, I'm going to include myself in us, is, like, if I was being honest, there's a part of me that feels like if we don't acknowledge the ways that we're complicit in colonialism ourselves, the ways that we actually hold power and wield power and don't listen and adhere to the status quo and uphold the power dynamics that would disproportionately, like, harm Indigenous folks, for many of us, that's so much easier. That is, like, the like, settler colonial project working perfectly, that we don't look at ourselves and we don't, like, look towards the harm. And the reality is that we're hurting and we're causing harm too. And I think a lot of the times we don't reckon with or realize the ways that we're, like, the harm that we're experiencing. You know when you feel like your body is completely fine and then somebody starts giving you a massage and you're like, wow, this muscle was so tight.
Yes.
And then it hurts so much more because it's, yes, like, oh, you've been clenching this part of your body for so long. You don't realize how much pain you're actually in because they've been busting that shit open now. It's like that. And I think when I've gotten to the place where I've realized that this colonial project negatively harms me too, that even if I play all the, like, cards right and, like, I play by the rules and I sing the national anthem and I say that I'm this and that and all that shit, at the end of the day, the thing that I experience is a disconnection from the people, mm-hmm, whose lands I'm living on. And then when I'm in the beauty of like the lands that I'm living on, sometimes it like takes my breath away. Like, think about, I'm so blown away by like the stewardship and the care. And like, can you imagine like who has been living on this land, calling this land home? Like, I feel so grateful for that. And so it's like, by virtue of being here, I almost feel like I have to, I'm looking at it. I'm looking at the reason. I'm looking all around me. Like, I have to be able to like reckon with both the beauty, but also like the extreme amounts of like disproportionate harm that I'm complicit in. Mm-hmm. And that shit is really fucking hard. But I also feel like that's not a reason. I mean, that's not an excuse. Maybe it's a reason that we can use to like justify or rationalize why we don't need to like show up and why we don't need to give something up, or why we don't need to look at the harm, or why we don't need to like reckon with the harm that we're complicit in. But it's still, the harm's still there, even if we recognize it or not. The violence of colonialism is still there, even if we don't recognize it or not. And so really then we're just foolish.
Absolutely. That is such a succinct and perfect way of saying that we're just foolish. Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, I think something that I learn more and more all the time is, you know, sometimes it's easier maybe to talk about these things a little bit more in the abstract.
Yeah.
And if I can't name specific things that I do and have done that have harmed Indigenous people, and if I can't name very specific ways that colonialism also is negatively impacting me and my life and my relationships, and if I can't name very specific ways that I am working to change those things and then find new ones and then change those things, mm-hmm. And on, then I'm not doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, oh, I guess I'm a Canadian, so I'm part of this, but
yeah.
I have never really done anything to, no. There's very specific things about all of our lives and what we do day to day that is harmful. And so we have to answer those questions for ourselves.
No, you're so right. You're so right about that. Like, talking about things almost abstract or generalities, as opposed to like applying the specificity of like how and what and where, what it looks like, it's like another way of kind of like absolving ourselves from understanding like the like material impacts of our us being settlers here. You know what I mean? Like, it kind of feels like it's distancing. Like,
yes. And I think I'll just to name kind of maybe what's now the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think some of those specific ways might be appropriate for me to say on this podcast, because it's, you know, it's taking like harms that have happened to very specific people,
yeah,
and putting them on a podcast, or it's potentially like harmful again, yeah, to say it to, you know, all of the people who might be listening. But those are specific conversations that I think we need to be having with each other as settlers, and that I know you and I have had with each other, not in front of a microphone, and will continue to have.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, thanks for addressing that. I think, I hear you loud and clear that it's like, it is the invitation for us to be honest with ourselves about, and I want to also add that like the experiences that I have had of racism, of anti-Black racism, have been sometimes nuanced, low key. You wouldn't pick it up unless you were another Black person. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I say that to say, just because you or I or anyone listening might not have enacted something that's like violence with a capital V doesn't mean that those small acts of cruelty or dissonance or disconnection or disrespect or brushing things under the rug are inconsequential. You know what I'm trying to say? Like that same level of like, it's in the way that we, it's in our body language. It's in the way that we speak. It's in the way that we think. It's in the way that like, it's in all of those areas that we enact so much harm on each other on a daily basis. And that obviously includes the internalizations that so many of us have that are deeply connected to a colonial mindset that harms Indigenous folks. So I really do appreciate what you're saying. I just wanted to add that, like, that invitation means for us to also think about things like power and when somebody's speaking and how we listen and how we show up and how we affirm in real time and how we show our support and how we tell people to shut the fuck up when they're taking up too much space, like how we put ourselves on the line, how we protect, how we love, like all of those things in my mind for myself are areas where I need to continue to show up as I'm practicing decolonization, both for myself and also for my community around me. You know, that it's like not, it's not me saying a land acknowledgement that's like going to undo colonialism in so-called Vancouver. Like that's like, great, Nick, you know whose lands you're occupying. So now what are you going to do and what kinds of relationships are you going to have? What kinds of decisions you're going to make as a business owner or as a person providing frontline support or as a person who has some positions of power? Or, you know what I'm trying to say? Mm-hmm. It's like weaving into your work, into your life, into your relationships, as opposed to like this finite thing that happens like a blip when we enter a Zoom meeting and there's like other people there and we say things like, you know what I'm trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
100%.
So, I mean, I deeply appreciate talking to you about this. I feel like there's endless areas for us to touch on. Like, I know I read from Black Looks and we can talk about like, you know, decolonizing aesthetics and decolonizing ways of knowing and decolonizing bodies and girl, there's so much that needs to be
everything
unfucked, basically. And I'm just really grateful to do this podcast and to have these conversations with you because I know that they're going to continue. So love you. Thank you.
I love you. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.